Hello, and welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
Welcome to episode 27 of Revitalize and Replant. I am Tom Rainer. I'm joined here with Jonathan Howe. And just a reminder, on many occasions we have with us Mark Clifton, and all those times that we have him with us, it just really adds to it. But Jonathan and I also like to get together and the two of us talk about this topic of revitalizing and replanting in North America. So Jonathan, we are about to get to a listener question, and I love the way that we do this. All of our topics are ultimately chosen by a listener submitting a question, and that listener is always rewarded.
Yeah, they get a free copy of Autopsy of Deceased Church by you, as well as Reclaiming Glory by Mark Clifton. Okay. So today's books will go to Arthur. He says...
Is this Arthur Rainer?
No, Arthur Rainer. Is that his full name?
Yeah, he's Arthur Thomas Rainer.
Okay, right. Yeah. Art.
Yeah, he was named after me.
Don't worry. He's a devout listener, I'm sure.
No, he'll never have any idea we talked about it. Sam will tell him.
Oh, okay.
Sam, you're listening. I know you're always listening. Sam, hello, Sam.
You're our favorite, Sam. Let's see. So Arthur says, Jonathan sometimes joking.
Jonathan? Arthur says Jonathan?
Yeah, he's talking about me.
Oh, it is talking about you.
Jonathan sometimes jokingly refers to you as the church mortician. Actually, you can go to churchmortician.com and find out why. But you also—
Really?
Yes. But you also often call yourself an obnoxious optimist. I've seen that several times. So let's hear some about the positivity. What about church revitalization and replanting gives you hope for the future of the church in North America?
That is a good question. I am the obnoxious optimist, and I am, according to Jonathan, at times the church mortician. Did you capitalize that, or did that just come submitted that way?
I think it came submitted that way.
Because it's really no
I think it's a proper noun, though.
Oh, so now I'm the prop. Yeah. It's now a proper noun. I am not a church mortician. I am the church mortician.
Well, if you go to churchmortician.com.
You are really pushing. I've never been there. I'm going to have to go there in between.
You'll recognize the site because it redirects right to TomRainer.com.
Oh, there you go. There you go. I thought you probably had something about me with the casket something of that effect.
No. You do that just enough. So anyway, today we're going to be positive, Dr. Rainer. We're not going to talk about dead churches. We're going to talk about 9 reasons that you're hopeful for church revitalization and replanting in North America.
Well, as we do this, understand that so much of what we are able to share with you is not because we just have some ideas. It is because we are in a massive feedback loop. Through social media, through TomRainer.com, through the two podcasts, Revitalize and Replant and Rainer on Leadership, and through Church Answers, literally dozens, if not hundreds, of comments are coming to us and questions are coming to us. And many of these we pursue. We begin to dig deeper and we begin to find out what is really going on. So as you listeners are listening to this episode 27 of Revitalize and Replant, please understand that these aren't just some type of wishful opinions, that these do have, at the very least, anecdotal evidence and some of it database evidence. So listen to these 9 very carefully, and I think that you will have some hope.
All right. Number 1 is a new wave of corporate prayer.
We need to define corporate prayer.
Praying corporately.
Yeah, we need to find what corporate is, because many people think that it's
business. We do that here. We have corporate prayer at Lifeway.
You're praying in the corporation. Corporate means the gather. It means the numbers, the members of the church. It means people coming together. So there is individual disciplines, there's personal disciplines, and then there are corporate disciplines. In many churches, we had forsaken, and in many churches we have forsaken, corporate prayer. Now, to be certain, we'll have an offertory prayer, and we'll have an opening prayer, and we'll have a benediction. But it is so routine and so rote, and as a matter of fact, you can almost guess that in many churches during the offertory, you're going to have someone who wants to bless the gift and the giver. And they will.
I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Oh, my goodness, Jonathan.
Maybe I just am not paying attention during the offertory. That's entirely possible.
You're probably on your phone during during the offertory like you are when you're driving.
No.
And I'm going around. All right, listeners,
to corporate prayer.
No, listeners, tell us if what you've heard in offertory prayers. To the first five who respond about what they're hearing in offertory prayer, Amy J is going to send them my book when it comes out about the welcoming church.
Yeah, becoming a welcoming church.
Becoming a welcoming church, and so
should be out soon. We may even have them in by the time this drops.
Okay. It'll be close.
It'll be close.
So to the first five, you're going to get my brand new book. It'll be signed by Jonathan. No, I think I'll sign it.
Comment at tomrainer.com.
Because there's a section where I actually took some information from one of your blog posts.
I think so.
And it's talking about websites or something like that. So yeah, you actually have some content credit in there. But to the first five,
royalty checks from B&H.
What's that? Yes. So if you can tell us what you hear redundantly, and you can also say in there, oh, I've heard bless the gift and the giver, then
probably said it, a couple of them.
Well, yeah, they may have too. And I can almost go through an offertory prayer, but I'm not going, it'll almost seem sacrilegious for me to do so, because I can almost go from beginning to end of what many, many people have prayed during the offertory prayer, because it's almost totally predictable. So we have this perfunctory, routine, and rote prayer. That is not real prayerful corporate worship. What are some examples of corporate worship? One of the examples is a church setting aside time during the service and guiding people through very explicit prayer. What is another sign of corporate prayer? Allowing people, just simply suggesting you may want to gather in prayer at some place, in groups, or maybe at the front, or something of that nature. It is just a continuous effort. It's a reminder to the congregation that we are powerless when we are prayerless. And so you got to really keep that as an emphasis in the church. And I am greatly encouraged that when you look at many of the churches that are beginning to turn around, they are doing so because they're emphasizing corporate prayer. Now, here's a question for you, Jonathan. Why do many churches not emphasize corporate prayer?
I honestly don't know.
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, they see the routine as corporate prayer.
Okay.
And so they accept that. And it's the same thing that I've mentioned in the past about mission drift. The more we move along in our church and the more we get in routines, we're not outwardly focused. Well, the prayer is an outward focus. It is looking beyond yourselves. It's looking to God for guidance, truth, and strength, and wisdom. And so when we don't have corporate prayer, it means that we have become inwardly focused. I am encouraged. You and I were in a church in Searcy, Arkansas, where they have had 24/7 ongoing prayer for, what was it, 5 years at the time we were there? It was several years.
It was longer than that. I thought it was 10. Or
it could have been 10 years.
I can't remember.
But they had someone praying for the church, for the ministries of the church, every hour. 24 hours a day, and like you said, it may have been as many as 10 years. But it's, and what that church has done, where it is, has been a pretty incredible story.
All right, number two, a rekindling of evangelism.
There is a real enthusiasm on my part to see that some churches are beginning to realize that church about me, myself, and I is not really church at all. I would encourage you to go to evangelismrenewal.com. I would encourage you to make a commitment for gospel conversations. I would encourage you to go look at some of the research that we have done there. Until there's a rekindling of evangelism, there will be a dearth of healthy churches. But when there's a rekindling of evangelism and the high intentionality, there are more and more healthy churches. More churches are waking up to that reality. Another source that I would give to you is the book. The book was written, gosh, almost 50 years ago. It's called Evangelism in the Early Church by Michael Green. And it's a long book and a lot of notes to it because it's well documented. It's not one of the simple Rainer books that you can go through pretty quickly. But if you want to see what happened to the early church in terms of their evangelism emphasis, I think it will give you a motivation and a biblical desire to be obedient. So I'm encouraged by the rekindling of evangelism.
Number three, I'm going to credit a lot of this to you, Dr. Rainer.
Oh.
A balance between theological and practical.
I was a part, at least involved, with the old church growth movement. Wrote my dissertation on the church growth movement. And for those who are unaware, that's okay. It was a missiological movement that really began in the 30s with a guy by the name of Donald McGavran when he was on the mission field.
Is that old? Or was?
He was, yes. Yeah. Yes.
I did not realize that. Okay.
Well, now you're making me wonder if I got my dates right. So
No. I've never looked it up.
Let me put it this way. Maybe my dates were wrong. The more you think about it, it may have begun with Roland Allen before Donald Miller.
I know that name too, yeah.
But at the early to mid part of the 20th century, Donald McGavran was on the mission field in India. He began to look at how people are reached with the gospel. He ended up writing a book that was published in 1955 called The Bridges of God. And that book became paradigmatic for how churches abroad, non-North American churches, move forward. It really became a movement then in North America. Did you find out?
Yeah, he was born in 1897.
Well, he could have been on the mission field in India.
Yeah.
In the 30s.
Wow, I had no idea he was born.
I had a conversation with him before he died.
He died in 1990, so he lived a long life.
Well, I was working on my dissertation and ended up finishing it in 88, so probably in 87 would have been the time I had a telephone conversation with him to keep you historically informed there. So where am I going with this? Donald McGavran, people caught on to what McGavran was advocating about the church growth movement. And when it came to North America, though, it took a sharp methodological turn. McGavran in India was primarily concerned theologically that if we're not being obedient to the Great Commission, there's probably a theological problem with it. And he was part of a mainline denomination, and so he saw that. Well, the church growth movement leaps over to North America. One of his early followers, Peter Wagner, begins to move it toward really pragmatism, really experientialism.
Maybe skewed it a little bit too far?
Not maybe.
Okay.
Skewed it.
I was being generous.
Skewed it a little bit too far. I've been identified with this movement because I wrote about it, and I had an affection for Dr. Wagner despite his idiosyncrasies. He it hadn't been that long ago since he died.
And if anybody knows about idiosyncrasies.
Yes, it would be.
It would be I.
Yes, sir. So the movement really propelled many churches, the influence of the movement propelled many churches to a methodological reality. We've now had a shift. We've had a steep theological shift. Some of it has come from the Reformed movement. Some of it has come from other segments. But that shift often has been so without application of theology. And so as often as the case, the pendulum swings. We've gone from practice to theology instead of a balance. And I hope I have a biblical view of this, that if we have a true theology, it will result in works and obedience.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing now is churches that are becoming more theologically grounded, but at the same time doing as well as believing.
You need orthodoxy and orthopraxy.
Oh, those are words that any seminarian would just absolutely love. You know what else you need? You need truth and application. That's the Rainer version of it.
All right. The fourth reason that you're hopeful for church revitalization and replanting in North America is the waning of worship wars.
They're not over.
No, but they're waning.
They are waning. I wish they would wane a little bit more. I wish they would get over
Thank
with.
Thank you, Elmer.
I wish they would be done, but you know what is happening.
What is happening?
We're moving from worship wars to other wars. I mean, but at least in the healthy churches, they're saying, you know, this is kind of silly to be fighting over our personal preferences. Why don't we just simply come together in the unity of the Spirit, and why don't we just move forward and say, we can worship the different styles? I wonder about these people. Let's look at both sides of it. Let's look at the traditionalists that anytime you play anything that's 1970 or later,
got to be in the hymnal.
It's just something that you don't like. Or let's look at the person that's a pure contemporary and has no appreciation for the richness of hymns or theology. You know what? You get them on the mission field, and what are they going to do? I'm talking about the different culture mission field,
okay,
where the worship is dramatically different. You know what we do when we go and we call it contextualization.
Yeah.
We adapt to the culture when it doesn't compromise with Scripture because we know that that's the biblical thing to do.
Yep.
Well, in churches across North America, we're beginning to see that happen in worship wars. I go to a church that's largely contemporary, and we've got quite a few old fellas in that church. And we may not exactly, it may not be our preference for the worship that we hear. It is very loud, I can tell you that. But it may not be our preference, but we're not letting that be an issue that is driving us away or putting a wedge in our fellowship.
All right, number five, a heightened emphasis on church revitalization. You're hopeful because people are emphasizing it more, including
this podcast. You would have never predicted just 5 years ago, Jonathan, that there would be an international podcast on revitalization and replanting.
No.
You would have never...
The concept of replanting, I don't know if it really existed 5 years ago, like in a grand scale.
And revitalization was not cool.
No.
I mean, only church planting was cool. They're both cool. They're both about the health of the church. It's not an either or, it is a both and.
You need both.
I would encourage you to go to some of the blog posts at samrainer.com. He has been writing really a lot of good things about community churches, neighborhood churches, and not giving up within the local community. I saw a tweet that he had that I must have pointed to one of his blog posts. He said, when I see a church on 3 acres surrounded by homes, many people say that it's landlocked. He said, I see it as a neighborhood gospel opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great attitude to have. And he's relatively young compared to me.
Well, I mean,
he's your
a lot
age.
Of people are young.
Well, yeah, most everybody, 90% of America is young compared to me. Let's move on.
All right. Number six, a surge of rebirth churches. This replanted churches.
Yeah. Again, to put it in a deep theological phrase, who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
Who would have thought that replanting would become something that we say is very important to give a church a new chance to have new life in an existing community? I've loved when we've had Mark Clifton in here. What's the hat that he wears?
International Harvester.
And he has the International Harvester hat, and he's a little bit of a curmudgeon, but he's full of wisdom, and he will say, this is the presence of the gospel in this neighborhood. We do not want the gospel presence to go away. And you can just see.
He's right.
Yeah, he's exactly right. You can just see the emphasis. And one of these things he said, look, if your church is about to die, let's talk about a replant or a rebirth of that church. And there are numbers of ways that that can happen. It can happen through outside intervention. Sometimes it can happen internally. Sometimes it can happen denominationally. But this, again, is an incredible sign that I am remaining the obnoxious optimist, not just about the church, because I know the capital C church will never die. We know that theology. But some people confuse Christ's proclamation that the church will not die and the gates of hell will not prevail against it to mean local congregations will not die. That is not the case. But I'm saying I'm encouraged about local congregations because of the rebirth of churches.
All right, here's another one I'm putting in the Rainer column. A renewal of meaningful membership.
I certainly cannot take credit for that thought. It's kind of biblical.
Well, I know. But the renewal part.
I can't even take credit for all of the renewal part. I'm thinking of some who have preceded me with this type of emphasis, like Mark Dever.
Yeah.
Mark Dever.
Oh, yeah.
Mark Dever has done an incredible job of talking about meaningful membership. Chuck Lawless has done a lot of work on meaningful membership. However, I began to talk about it. Most people think I began to talk about it with I Am a Church Member.
No, you talked about it way before that.
High Expectations.
Yeah.
High Expectations was the first time that I really began to say, we've got to get our local ecclesiology correct. We are taking church membership too lightly. And if you're truly a part of the First Corinthians 12 body of Christ, then you will be functioning as a member of the body. Many people confuse the institutional type of church membership, like a country club membership, when I'm saying that. No, I'm talking about whatever manifestation that has in your church, you should have people who are members in the sense that they are participating, contributing to the body, like 1 Corinthians 12, which uses the word members. I am really, really encouraged that I'm seeing that. Now, obviously, this became more accepted, more embraced with my little book, I Am a Church Member. 1.3 million copies later in so many languages, he says, in a very self-promoting way. It has really made an impact, and it's not slowing down at all. I think the reason it made an impact is not because Rainer is bright. I think it made an impact because there was such a hunger for someone to articulate this on behalf of the masses of members across America and the world.
All right. Number eight, a concerted focus on impacting the community.
Yeah. These are overlapping. When you talk about church rebirth, when you talk about revitalization, when you talk about corporate prayer, when you talk about the rekindling of evangelism, they are not emphasized in this abstract context. They are emphasized in a doing context. And where are we doing most of these? We're doing them in our Jerusalem. We are being more and more obedient to Acts 1:8, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the earth. Many times for many churches, reaching out is skipping over the first three and just getting to the ends of the earth and paying someone to do your evangelism for you, your missions for you. But when you begin to look at the real meaning of Acts 1:8, it is concentric circles, or it is continuing outwardly. But don't think that you are doing missions or evangelism if you are not evangelizing or impacting your community first. That's Jerusalem.
All right. I should just stop it right there. It's like drop, mic drop.
Boom.
Yeah. All right. Number nine, final point here, a balanced view of numbers.
With the church growth movement that we have discussed here, and I gave you that little historical excursion of Donald McGovern and Peter Wagner and the fact that I was somehow connected. Roland Allen, which preceded Donald McGovern and influenced Donald McGovern. One of the things that McGovern said is, you know, we really need to keep track of how many people we're reaching, because if we're not keeping track of them, then we don't know if we're reaching them or not.
Yeah, you got to measure things to know if it's growing.
And so the pendulum began to swing, and people began to say, okay, let's count. Well, that went to an extreme.
Because people, all they cared about was getting more numbers.
Yeah. And one of the biggest contributors to the numerical emphasis was not as much the church growth movement as the Southern Baptist Convention.
Million more in 54.
Well, Jonathan, and the fact that we counted everything.
Yes.
And we rewarded by recognition those with the highest numbers and those with the most. I am not suggesting that there's anything wrong with that, but I am saying that we overplayed the numbers. And here's what we did. How many members do we have? And again, for those of you who are not part of the SBC, my apology. How many members do we claim we have in the Southern Baptist Convention?
Well, it kind of varies, but between 15 and 16 million.
Well, it's below 16 now, and it's been
15 million plus.
15 plus. 15 plus more in 2004? No, that's probably at 16 by then. But how many people show up on a given Sunday?
Between 5 and 6 million.
So that tells you something. That tells you that we got a lot of numbers in, but we didn't do a lot of assimilating in discipleship. Numbers became important for numbers' sake. However, again, here's a mixed metaphor. Many of us have begun to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And we say, because there's so much numerical emphasis, we're not going to count anything. It's unspiritual. It's unspiritual to report any kind of numbers. Well, one of the reasons I'm excited about the health of the church is that there's now, the pendulum is now more and more hitting toward the middle. And it hits toward the middle, then we will have a balanced view of numbers. There were two censuses taken in the Old Testament. One was of God, one was of Satan. That means you can count with the wrong motive or a godly motive. And so I am encouraged that many churches are not making numbers the end in themselves, but they're using them for their own self-accountability to reach people and to assimilate people. And with that, I'll say that these are nine hopeful signs of health in the church. And I will also say I am so grateful for Kevin Ezell, Mark Clifton, and the North American Mission Board, who are making this podcast possible.
Revitalize and Replant is sponsored by the North American Mission Board and churchreplanters.com. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committing to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches while simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new churches. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
Okay, I am both the church mortician, churches are dying, but I'm also the obnoxious optimist. And I hope that you've heard some optimism in the course of episode 27. Thank you again for being a part of Revitalize and Replant. Join us each and every week as we're seeking to help churches get healthier together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.